Right now, no delay in getting to speak to Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. He joins us right now. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. I have a wintry subject today.
Oh, what's that?
Short ribs.
Ooh.
Now, I have cravings, I will have to confess. And I am on a meat crave lately. And I really what I want is grilled meat. But we'll get to that later.
You know, the best short ribs I ever had were from West Cornwall.
Oh, really? Grown in West Cornwall? Or cooked in West Cornwall?
Cooked. RSVP, the restaurant there. The
best, well, of course.
Best short ribs, yeah.
He is a great cook.
Yeah.
Do you remember or know what he did with them?
All I know as somebody who likes to eat is it melted, literally.
Well, that's why we love short ribs.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
They melt. So I have been craving meat in general, grilled meat in particular, and so I go to the butcher. I have a great butcher here, and he's not actually in Park Slope. He's in the next enclave, let's call it, Windsor Terrace. But right, actually, the street it's on is Prospect Park West. There is a shopping strip to Prospect Park West and Windsor Terrace. In any case, I go to the butcher, and what I intended to buy, which he almost always, but not always, has in the case, is fillet tips, meaning the little short end of a full fillet. Hard to sell those. You can't sell it as filet mignon. You can include it if you're selling a whole filet. And then usually what I do, what most people who know what they're doing do, is they tuck in the tip, making a relatively uniform cylindrical roast. Anyway, he sells them. And they're cheap. They're like half the price of filet mignon, but it's the same cut of meat. And I like to cook those in my cast iron skillet over as high a heat as I can get, which means that I let the skillet heat up for 10 minutes, and then I put them in, and they only take 3 minutes a side, and then I put them on a platter or a tray and let them sit for a few minutes, and they're perfect, medium rare. You can cook them longer if you want more than medium rare. Anyway, he didn't have them, so I'm contemplating the case. By the way, my butcher has a lot of things already in a case that where they serve you. It's not self-serve. And then, you know, they have, in the back, there are butchers actually butchering up meat, and they'll do whatever you want, truthfully. I get all kinds of special things from them. But I just wanted something out of the case. So I'm standing there contemplating and muttering to myself, oh, so many choices. What am I going to make for dinner? And the woman next to me says, I was thinking exactly the same thing. So we start talking. Ends up, she says, and I have two teenagers at home that I have to feed meat. And then she says, as an aside, we're Argentinian. So I said, I guess your kids eat meat. She says, it's almost the only thing they do eat is meat. I said, oh, they're really Argentinian, because I've been to Argentina, and I always comment they have no vegetables in Argentina. You guys think that a lettuce salad is a vegetable. She said, she was really laughed hard at that. She says, exactly. She says, when I met my husband, he had to keep telling me you can put other things in a salad besides lettuce. So anyway, she says to the butcher, she says, okay, you have some short ribs. Short ribs. I have had short ribs on my brain for weeks now. But every time I go to the supermarket, I see the short ribs, and they are literally half fat. So I'm not buying them. There's so little meat on them. Yes, a lot of the fat melts away, and yes, the meat that's there is going to be super succulent. But, you know, at $6 a pound, between the bone and the fat, you're not really getting much meat. So I've been passing them by. But there actually are several cuts of meat that are called short ribs, and they don't necessarily have to be mostly fat. I'll get to that in a second. So the Argentinian woman, who, by the way, it ends up is a Lebanese Jew from Buenos Aires. and she was very funny. And she said, oh, you know, there's only one great... I said, you know, there's a very good Argentinian restaurant in Williamsburg. I can't remember the name, and I didn't bother to look it up because you can never get in anyway, which is what she said. She says, yeah, but you can never get in there. I said, yeah, but I've gotten in there a few times, and I can testify that it's really, really good. But you're right, you never can get in there. She said, but the really good place is called Buenos Aires, and it's in Manhattan. I forget where. And she said, well, what's your standard? She says, they have very good empanadas. And that's so Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires, you know, the main street food and beyond are some kind of empanada, which we all know is, right, an enclosed pastry, a savory pastry.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she says, I'll take some short ribs. And Mike, one of the guys behind the counter, there were several named Mike, Hispanic Mike, as opposed to Italian boy Mike. Hispanic Mike brings out these short ribs, the likes of which I have not seen in years. They were substantial amounts of meat. They were gorgeous. I immediately said, I'll have some of those too. She took about 6 pounds of short ribs.
Wow.
She's got two teenagers and a husband to feed. But she was going to grill them. And my customer doesn't eat grilled short ribs. It's too much chewing. I always say Americans don't like to chew. You got to give them tender meat. We've all grown up eating grass-fed, very tender meat. These days, meat is not as tender as it used to be for whatever reasons. There are reasons. But in any case, short ribs, to me, is a braising cut. In fact, it's the cut. It is the braising cut I grew up with, because flanken, which is an Eastern European word for short ribs, cut not in the same direction as the rib itself, but across the ribs. So each slice of flanken has several pieces of the bone in it across a slice. Now, the slice can be very thin, you know, half inch. It can also be thick. And I must say that when I brown flanken for whatever I'm going to add it to, many things I add it to, I often take off a couple of slices because I love the flavor of the short rib meat, even though it does require some chewing. Argentinians have no trouble chewing. They make grilled short ribs all the time. Koreans have no trouble chewing. They make galbi, which is grilled short ribs. I was not going to even attempt that. And what I was really craving was the succulent fall off the bone meat of a short rib. Now, back to flanken for a moment. I do know, see, if you go to a supermarket that carries this cut of short rib called flanken, 99% of the time, it's what's called plate flanken, or plate short ribs, for that matter, which is the fattiest portion of the breast. Now, think about it. Your ribs are equivalent to the cow's ribs, and not all ribs are alike. The ones that are in the high part of the chest are called, in Yiddish anyway, breast flanken. But they're really chuck flanken. And then there's the middle part, which is also somewhat meaty, and also part of the chuck. And then there's plate flanken, which is very fatty. So these are all kosher cuts. So you will find the variants in a kosher supermarket. And they will sell the meaty, meaty flanken as breast flanken. In a regular butcher shop, they don't distinguish flanken as flanken, but you got to say, can I take a look at the flanken? And then you can determine, you know, is it meaty enough for you? Because, as I say, it could be cut from several portions of the chest. So what am I going to do with the flanken? Because I haven't had it in a long time and I haven't made it in a long time, I decided to go with the most basic possible braise, which is I brown the meat. I did put a skimming of a vegetable oil at the bottom of the pan. I did not flour the meat before browning it, but you could flour, dust the meat with flour, shake off the excess, and that will give you a thicker gravy in the end. Mine did not result in a thick gravy. I'm okay with that. But if you like a thickened gravy, this is the time to add the flour when you're browning the meat, because then you will be browning the flour as well and basically creating a brown roux. So brown the meat. I do it on medium-high heat. Don't rush it too much. Don't put too much in the pan at once. I used my largest sauté pan because I didn't want the meat to be piled up on top of each other, because that increases the amount of liquid you'd have to add. So I used, like, I mean, it's more than a 10-inch. It's more like an 11-inch deep sauté pan, you know, with a cover. It's probably my most useful pot. Anyway, I browned the meat in that. And not all together. I had 2.5 pounds of short ribs, which in the end doesn't come out to very much. Anyway, as it browned, I took it out of the pan. And then when it finished browning, I added vegetables. I had already chopped 2 medium-large carrots into half-inch dice, a large onion into half-inch dice, and 2 ribs of celery in half-inch dice. And I took a whole head of garlic, cut off the top to expose the flesh from all the cloves, and put the whole head of garlic in there too. Sauteed all this around for 2 or 3 minutes, put the meat back in the pot. Added my red wine. Now I'm going to use 2 parts broth to 1 part wine. If you don't have red wine, you can use white wine. If you don't have good beef broth, as I did in the refrigerator, you can use canned or boxed broth, or you could use chicken broth. Maybe you have that in the freezer.
And what if what if you run a non-alcoholic house?
Then just use broth.
Okay.
And then leave out the wine.
All right.
But you're going to need, for 2.5 pounds of meat, I needed 3 cups of liquid. So 3 cups of broth or 2 cups of broth and 1 cup of wine.
Okay.
So that'll do. You know, you'll be missing a flavor, but there'll be plenty.
You'll be
of
missing
flavor.
A note. Yeah, exactly. But that's
But it's okay. You wouldn't miss it because you don't ever use it.
That's right. Okay.
It's okay. So this is, you know, this is like Sam Sifton had the supplement in the paper this weekend. This is cooking without a recipe.
This is,
this is your basic technique.
They're called no recipe.
Any meat. Pardon me?
They're called no recipe recipes. And what it reminds me of, and I'm a big fan, but it reminds me of, if you read Elizabeth David or any other, if you've been exposed to those cookbooks, it's just like you take this and you take this and you take that.
Well, let me just say that this is not a new idea. Gene Anderson, a good friend of mine from the old days, wrote a book actually called Cooking Without Recipes. And she wasn't original with that idea either. But you are cooking with a recipe because the recipe is in your head. So this braising technique is in my head. And I just decided I wanted to do the most basic possible. If you go online and look at recipes, or go to your cookbook collection even better and find short rib recipes, you'll find that everybody puts their own twist on these things.
Yep.
But that this is basically it. There are Asian ones out there where they add various Asian ingredients to the sauce. I'm going to tell you how I'm going to vary mine a little bit today, now that it's already cooked, and I'm going to recook it, or reheat it, I should say. But so you need 3 cups of liquid, and the vegetables you've cooked a few minutes in the fat, and then you're going to add some of the liquid, not all the liquid, and then scrape the bottom of the pot. If the vegetables themselves haven't already deglazed the pan, and by the way, while you're browning that meat, do not let anything burn on the bottom of the pot. It gets good to get dark brown, but especially if you use flour on the meat, you have to be careful. So just don't let it burn. Dark brown is good. And you add a cup of the liquid, and you scrape around the bottom, and then add the other 2 cups of liquid, whether it be broth, the first cup is wine, red broth or all broth, doesn't matter. And then add the meat back in, nestle it down into the vegetables, and add the rest of the liquid. And then my simple seasoning was about a half a teaspoon of dried thyme and a bay leaf, salt and pepper, of course. I didn't need that much salt because I was using my own beef broth, which was already salted. So that's it. Now is the crucial part, getting the meat to be tender. I cook this at 275. I suggest when you're braising meat, to cook it at a very low temperature, 275, and for a very long time. This will break down, this will melt away fat and break connective tissue so that you have really succulent meat. But warning, you can overcook braised meat. You can go from mouth-wateringly tender and succulent to rope.
and have done so, thinking.
So mine cooked for at three. I knew that at 2 hours it was not going to be anywhere done, but I decided to check it after 2 hours, and I turned the meat around a little bit to make believe I was doing something, and put it back in the oven. And at 3.5 hours, it was tender, but not quite. Now where I want you to catch this is before it gets so tender that the bone's falling off, and that will happen.
That's a mistake I've made numerous times, and it took me about 4 or 5 times of cooking them in this incredible cooking pans that Jill gave me to get them so they're still on the bone. Yeah, you're right.
Well, this is it. I mean, for presentation purposes, I don't really care about the bone, but I know that some people want to put it on the plate on the bone. Doesn't bother me if it's just a hunk. If it's really good short ribs, you know, with a lot of meat, it's just a big hunk of meat. So mine cooked for 4 hours. And at that point, one of the tiny pieces, the meat did fall off the bone when I poked the fork in, but the rest were in place. I let it cool. I have now refrigerated it overnight. I'll be able to skim off fat now that it's cold. And I'm going to reheat it just until the liquid is liquid. And then I'm going to take the meat out and put it aside while I doctor my gravy.
Okay.
Now, in this gravy are a lot of vegetables already, and I did pull out the garlic and the head of garlic, and I squeezed whatever was in there into the gravy already. I'm tempted. I read a recipe over the weekend where they said, oh, the vegetables are all spent, so strain them out. I'm not going to do that. I'm actually thinking of possibly pureeing them into the gravy.
What Marshall has done?
As a vegetable thickener.
Right, as what Marshall sometimes does.
Of these delicious juices, pardon me?
What Marshall sometimes does, and the only reason I'm interrupting is because I don't, but it's just great, is he uses potatoes and then he just bashes them into...
Well, that is a thought, Marshall. We had the same thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I decided, I want to eat polenta today.
Well, I would have both.
So I'm gonna add a spoon of tomato paste to the gravy. There's no tomato presence in it at all, and I must say I tasted it last night before I put it away, and it was very good. Gravy, but I think it might actually tolerate being pureed with all the vegetables and also the garlic that's in there. I think it's going to be good, and we're going to have it on polenta. And by the way, then after I've doctored the gravy, I'm going to put the meat back in and just heat it through. At this point, all it needs to be is heated through. Don't let it simmer. Just heat it gently through, and it will be super succulent meat.
Yeah.
And you can eat the whole thing with a fork. If it's, you know, you don't even need a knife. It's going to fall off. It's falling apart, succulent, and on top of polenta with gravy. I'm sorry. Could life be better than that?
Except if you're not in the mood for polenta, in which case you want potatoes.
But that's one of the things that happened while I went with Jill when she took me to RSVP and they brought out the short ribs. My God, it was just like. I had died and gone to heaven.
Maybe I need to go eat Guy's food. Guy I have to say, makes the best, what is it called? Tartatin. Ever.
Yeah.
I don't know if he still makes it regularly at the restaurant, but I bet you if you requested it, he'd make one for you. It's really the best tartatin, which, if you don't know what that is, it's an upside-down caramelized apple tart.
And the great thing about Guy is, I think, you know, he basically learned to cook with his grandmother. And
We all did.
Well, no, we all didn't, sadly. No, I'm not talking about we.
Except for the kids who go to culinary school and know nothing.
Right.
So anyway, but I want to go back to meat for a minute, because it ends up the Argentinian woman, who's really Lebanese Jew. We joked about that, you know, Buenos Aires is the only place where Nazis live next door to Jews. They're both escaping the same government.
Yep.
Anyway, she also bought, and I followed suit, hanger steak. Now, I don't usually cook hanger steak. I'm not sure why. I love skirt steak, but skirt steak has become insanely expensive. In my butcher, skirt steak was only $1 a pound cheaper than filet mignon. I blame this on all the people who eat fajitas, because when I was a kid, skirt steak was cheap steak. So I said to her, well, I usually cook the, by the way, they're both muscles of the diaphragm. The hanger steak is the short muscle, and the skirt steak is the long muscle. And they have similar texture. It's very grainy meat, very well marbled. The reason hanger steak is called hanger steak is because it's a muscle that hangs in the between the lungs in the chest cavity, and there's only one of it. You know, almost every other cut of meat there's two in the animal, but a hanger steak there's only one. And it was also called butcher's tenderloin when I was a kid, because that was the cut that butchers took home for themselves. It was also, at a kosher butcher, a very popular, and still is, a popular meat for ground beef. So the Argentinian woman says, I'm also buying hanger steak because my kids, you know, they're Argentinian. They have to have a lot of meat. So I guess one day she was going to grill. Oh, no, she was grilling everything. So she lives in Park Slope. She probably has a backyard with a barbecue. In any case, I bought the hanger steak, and I bought too much hanger steak. So we're going to eat hanger steak again today, but it's great. At least my butcher's hanger steak is great. And I'm turned back on to hanger steak, which was only $11 a pound as compared to $20 a pound or $21 a pound for the, believe it or not, for filet, for a skirt steak. So I don't have the facility to grill anything. I don't even have an outside exhaust over my stove. When I grill something in my kitchen, I have to open the kitchen window from the top so the smoke goes out and put on the stupid fan over the stove. But even that doesn't really do the job, but I do it anyway. And what I do is I bring my black iron skillet to the hottest point possible, which means let it keep going, let it keep on high, preheating on high heat until the pan is literally smoking. And then I put the hanger steak in, and it only needed, like my filet tips, 3 minutes per side. And then I let it stand for 3 or 4 minutes, and it's perfect. Medium rare, could be the thinner piece could be a little medium, whereas the thicker piece will be more medium rare, which is to my liking. And it was reasonably tender, no complaints from the non-chewing American. And I didn't have to season it with anything but salt and pepper, which is what I wanted. I just wanted plain grilled meat. What did we have? Oh, we had good vegetables that night.
I was just going to ask.
Yeah.
No, because flank steak, which is not skirt steak.
Flank steak is super duper lean.
And flank steak, right, it doesn't...
flank steak is...
Skirt steak, hanger steak is used for steak frites. But flank steak...
Yeah, hanger steak, yes, it is. L'anglais in French.
L'anglais.
L'anglais.
But
if you see l'anglais on the menu, it's hanger steak.
Right.
Very, very popular cut because
it's not inexpensive,
but it's not super duper expensive.
Right.
Exactly. Although, the other day in my supermarket, I don't trust the supermarket's meat, but the other day in my supermarket, there were club steaks, which is basically ribeye. But ribeye today is a new name for something.
Is that what that is?
It's a boneless rib steak. A club steak is a boneless rib steak. And they were cut thick. And they were only $11 a pound. Which, you know, given the good chop meat is $5 a pound, a steak, $11 a pound. Go to a restaurant in New York, you have to figure a minimum $50 a person just for the meat.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
In a steakhouse.
Yep.
We went to a steakhouse that I've been dying to go to. It was several weeks ago. I don't think I mentioned it, but anyway, not important. But that's what it was, and it was. And I thought it was inexpensive. It was $100, $99 for two, for a steak for two. That was a great steak. So that's about minimum you're going to pay. So when you think about that. If you have the facility to make it yourself, and if I buy a very thick rib steak or whatever kind of steak, very thick, I like them thick, I do the 3 minutes sear on top of the stove, and then I put it in a 450, 500 degree oven for 5 minutes, and that finishes off the cooking perfectly. It doesn't have the flavor of cooking over charcoal, but we make do.
That's exactly right. You make do with what you can do.
Yeah, so short, but, you know, on a snowy day like today, short ribs hit the spot.
Sounds good to me.
Come for dinner, Marshall. Although I have to say, my two and a half pounds of short rib turned out to be,
about a
you
pound.
Know, maybe I could, with a lot of polenta, I could stretch it to three people.
That's right.
Maybe. The thing is, with that,
well,
that
yeah, goes, I'll tell you next week how far it went.
Okay.
All right.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yum.
Take care.
Happy President's Day.
Right.
It's actually today for me. It's happy, not my President's Day. Go on.
Isn't President's Day?
I was hoping you wouldn't get me started, Marshall. But last night's interview on 60 Minutes may have been the most upsetting thing yet.
Yeah.
And I woke up so disturbed, the only thing I could think about was short ribs.
That's it. That's what food
well, good.
Is. The,
so,
food is the answer to all. It is. Good
that's,
food.
That's right. So I guess you missed that now not your president is technically obese.
I know. That's right.
Oh, well, you know, that I don't want to go there because I can't talk, you know?
That's right. All right, Arthur. Take care.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.